Welcome to the Journal Hijabi podcast. I'm your host, Sirin, and here we're all about elevating the voices of hijabi women in mainstream media through authentic storytelling. Without further ado, let's begin the episode.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you remember, one of the very first guests I had, and I have my Invisalign in, so if there's any lisps, that's why, and I'm not taking them off. The first guest I had was my sister, Yasmin, and in that episode, we talked about her being the only hijabi in the room, kind of from an engineering perspective, and really just in general, like, you know, me too, you know, is hijabis, you just like tend to be or find yourselves like being the only hijabi in the space that you're in. And so in that very first episode, which was May 17th, 2020, you discussed the first time you wore the hijab and how the hijab isn't depicted in one image and the empowering side of being the only hijabi in the room. So kind of sitting with that and seeing how your hijab journey, because it is a journey in exploration, was since we recorded that episode until now. The hijab is like, you know, a big spectrum and it has its lows and downs and neutral. So let's start with the 4 daily check-ins. Physically, I feel calm because it's like evening. I hear your cat howling, her cat mishmish. By the way, I came here to stay with my sister in Austin for a bit. She has a cat and I'm not used to cats. And I thought that I had allerophobia. What is it called? Like the fear of the phobia of cats. And I'm slowly getting used to her mishmish. And yeah, it's a vibe. So she makes me feel relaxed sometimes. Mentally, I feel clear. Spiritually, I feel full. Emotionally, I feel a lot of emotions at once, but I'm just processing them as they come.
I think for me, emotionally, I feel excited, but also, you know, vulnerable because I'm sharing this very specific journey that maybe some people would be uncomfortable with sharing, so there's a little bit of uncomfortable feeling, but I'm excited to share that experience. Mentally, I'm feeling pretty clear because I can share that with others and I know that it'll have an impact. Spiritually, I am feeling, you know, neutral, could be doing better, but I think I want to pray after this, you know, that'll make a difference. And then mentally, did I say mentally?
Well, we're kind of being interrupted in the moment by a cat.
If you heard any
weird noises on my microphone, she was like licking it or something.
Mish.
Welcome to the podcast. What do you have to say, hijabi? How do you like wearing the hijab?
Oh, it's a wire, and you know cats love wires.
Here, let's get you off the bed.
Well, it's or just chill. Just let her chill.
We just can't move the wire because she will want to eat it. Okay, so yeah, we'll kind of just dive right in. It's pretty interesting and a very unique story how, you know, I was the first guest on Sitting's Journal Hijabi podcast, and I was the first hijabi to come on and talk about my hijab story and how it was to wear that hijab. And, you know, instead of feeling ashamed or bad or guilty for coming on now later and telling the story of my taking off the hijab, I'm really just viewing it as a continuation of my hijab journey story, which is exactly what it is. So I'll kind of start with the beginning of my journey to not wearing the hijab anymore. And really, honestly, it started out of curiosity.
And let me just know that, you know, this episode in Journal Hijabi, just in general, is a space that celebrates not only hijabis, but non-hijabis, girls who are about to wear the hijab, girls that don't, girls that took it off. So there's no, like, judgment here. And, like, if you're listening to this or, like, if, you know, you feel judgy or you're just not, like, agreeing with it, then this isn't the space for you. So I just thought I would like to say that.
Yeah, and thank you for saying that. I think there's obviously a lot of stigma around women who've taken off their hijab, and it's just been an absolute shit show, especially on social media, of women getting all this disgusting backlash for a community that's really supposed to be for them, especially during the hard times.
Yeah, that's when they need their other hijabi sisters'
support
the most, yeah. And their families,
you know, and supporting, by the way, it doesn't mean, hey, good job taking off the hijab, yes, that's a great choice,
yeah.
But all it is not bashing them. Just don't make them feel like shit. They already feel like shit. Let me make that clear. Yeah. I promise you.
Just think about the strength that it takes to even make that decision. Mm-hmm. Wearing the hijab for a decade,
mm-hmm.
the better part of your whole human life.
Yeah.
And it's a tough decision. And so if you really care about her, mm-hmm. as your friend or just as a human, and honestly, if you were like a true hijabi, you would just sit there and listen with no judgment. So that's what I'm doing here today, and that's what I hope all my listeners are doing. So go ahead and tell us your hijab journey.
Yeah, continuation of my hijab journey. So, yeah, I'll kind of start off by saying, you know, obviously we grew up in the South, we grew up in Texas, and something that I was mentioning in the first time that I came onto the podcast was my hijab experience at work when I was an intern working for Airbus. And, you know, it was very much a job where a lot of my coworkers were veterans.
Texas thing, go on.
Like old white men who are openly Trump supporters and, you know, just that kind of vibe. And, you know, here's me wearing a hijab just chilling. And it was an interesting experience. And I think that combined with just, you know, in general living in the South as a hijabi really always made me curious. And I'm pretty sure it's pretty normal. I'm sure every hijabi has been curious what it's like to not wear this hijab. And seeing it in a light where you do get scared. It's stares. You do get stares from people. People look like they're scared of you. I remember this one instance, I'll never forget it, when we were working with Baba at Church's Village, and some guy, you know, was checking out, and I'm here at the register, like, checking out. This man would not even look me in the eye. Like, just completely... like, I felt like an alien.
No, it's crazy because it's actually either way in Texas. Like, either they don't look you in the eye, or they do.
Stare you down,
and, like...
both of which are very uncomfortable, by the way.
Uncomfortable? Well, I would rather them not look me in the eye, because it's like, okay, well, you don't even have the guts to, like...
No, but, like, if I'm checking you out, I'm like, you're not even acknowledging my existence. Like, I felt like shit. I felt like crap. Like, he wouldn't
even... it's kind of interesting that you mentioned that, because almost all of the experience that I've dealt with as a hijabi is like being confronted. Like, they come to me in the face, boldly tell me, like, are you Muslim? Why do you wear that? Why are you hiding your hair? Are you like from Afghanistan? Like, did you escape war? Like, you know, like, automatically, like, assume things. So that's why I'm like, oh, I would love, it would be like a comfort if it was just like, ignore me, don't look me in the eye, and just leave, you know. But yeah, go on.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I kind of just had this like building curiosity of how my life would be like, how my interactions would be if I wasn't a hijabi. And so, you know, at that time, I had moved out of my parents' house. I lived in San Marcos to finish my studies at Texas State, and was living alone. And it was a beautiful experience for me into self-exploration and learning more about myself and who I was as a person, separate from, you know, what the community wanted me to be, what my parents wanted me to be. And, you know, my hijab journey was very much a part of that.
And some people don't have that luxury.
Yeah.
That's a luxury, to be able to tap out of where you live in your community and be able to figure that out on your own.
Yeah, I think tap into really yourself.
Overlook that luxury as women living in Arab women living in America, and, you know, just having the parents that we have.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so I will say, living in San Marcos was a beautiful experience. I did not get the judgment and the stares that I did get in DFW. I really didn't. Like, it was such an accepting, beautiful, loving community. But I think that curiosity was kind of just lingering in my head. And I'm not going to lie, I think there might have been an ounce of rebellion that went into kind of that decision. You know, I'm Palestinian, well, we're natural rebels.
Let's go back to that term, rebellion, or rebellious. It's like, when you're not supported by the people around you about the hijab, or you're struggling to connect with it or understand it, and then you go on to figure it out yourself, it somewhat feels like a sense of rebelling the version of you that was a hijabi,
mm-hmm.
and then not, and kind of, you know, just being rebellious in that nature of who was against it, who made you think of it like that.
Yeah.
It's you versus you, the hijab, your hijab versus your hijab.
Exactly. So yeah, it started off really with just that experimenting and that exploration of self in that way. What does it feel like to go outside in public without my hijab? And I was really hyper vigilant and aware of my surroundings. I was really looking at people. How were people looking at me? How were people, like, were people accepting me? Was I fitting in? Like, was I getting those stares? Of course I wasn't, because I was just fitting in. I was one of the others. And sure, that might have come with a sense of more acceptance from the people around me, but like, what even is that? Like, what even is this acceptance from people around you? Is it just people just not staring at you?
It's crazy because we say that in the sense of the hijab, but it's also our personality, and it's like those lines can always easily get blurred as a hijabi. Are they judging me for my personality, for what's on my head, like
for the shoes I'm wearing? Like, well, it can be so many things.
Yeah,
exactly. And you know, I developed this sense that, okay, because I've taken off the hijab, I am now safer. This was all something, again, that I've just that I orchestrated in my head, that I was safer, that I was more accepted, that I just blended in, and that was the safer route for me, to just blend in, not stand out. Again, you know, remember, I'm away from my family, I'm in this foreign place, it's my first time living alone, and it just felt safe to blend in and not stand out and not be the outcast.
Yeah, definitely. I feel that. I was going to say that it's kind of like a defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. Like we were talking about in a previous episode, that like the hijab can be like a survival mode, you know? Yeah. And just being out there alone as an Arab woman living solo, and then just even thinking of it, you know, it's actually a term coined by forgot, I'm sorry, but I'm gonna research it and put it in the description notes. But the term is called intersectionality, something like that, to where you kind of experience things like in different like layers. Mm-hmm. So one, you're a woman, that's a thing, right?
Yeah,
alone, blah blah, woman living alone, okay, on top of that, a hijabi woman living alone, you know? Yeah. So it's like the intersectionality of
that's a beautiful way of those things, seeing like all the layers of a situation and like really being able to analyze it for exactly what it is.
Arab, Muslim, hijabi, woman, you know, it's like all those things like on top of each other.
Mm-hmm. And so in this idea that I've created myself for myself, that I am now more accepted, I am more safe by society, I really then was left with my self-acceptance. And it was like this huge struggle for me to accept the fact that I had made that decision. I'm still dealing with that. Like, it's
the decision to wear it
to
or
take
not
it off. Oh, take it off, to accept myself for, you know, again, wearing it for a whole decade and then taking it off. And I think a huge part of that is that societal pressure that's put on us. Like, I didn't tell any of my DFW friends. I couldn't. Mm-hmm. It was so difficult for me to come out and tell anybody, even my family, because I felt so much shame. I felt so much guilt. I did not even accept myself because of that decision. And you know, it was and it is very hard, and like I think it is very multi-layered, in the sense that self-acceptance is a huge part of our daily life. Like, you have to accept yourself in order to live a happy life, and that was something that I didn't have. And I think the decision of not wearing the hijab anymore just even highlighted it even more and made it so loud. It made it unbearable, almost. And, you know, at that point is where Deep Divine Femme started. And Deep Divine Femme was my road to self-acceptance. And my road to self-acceptance was honoring myself. Honoring myself, forgiving myself, being merciful with myself. Forgiveness is the most God-like trait. And if God made us and we are from God, then why can't we forgive ourselves? Why are we so hard on ourselves? So,
and merciful.
Yeah, and merciful.
Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim.
Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim.
Give yourself
the
mercy,
most gracious,
sis.
The most merciful. SubhanAllah. These are the two things that we say. The most gracious, the most merciful.
Yeah, embody God. Just yeah. Like He is the most merciful. Be that to yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, it's so beautiful. And deep divine femme, you know, which is deep divine feminine, is recognizing that divine feminine that lives within us, and she's always there, and she is dying to be nurtured and acknowledged and loved and cherished and cared for, and to be given that grace and to be given that mercy. Like, that to me is my most true authentic self. Like, to just live unapologetically and to know my power and to speak my voice and speak my truth and inspire other women to do exactly the same thing. And go ahead.
And I think as Arab women, and it's weird that like I keep going back and forth, like Arab woman, Muslim woman, or hijabi woman. I don't know. Arab woman, hijabi woman, or just woman.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really talked about or celebrated or said. Mm-hmm. You know, like we were talking about the womb and like nurturing that and
yeah.
Deep divine femme and stuff like that is just not really talked in the era.
Exactly,
hijabi.
Which is why I wanted to make it so bad. Yeah, yeah. In the Arab society, unfortunately, let me just say, side note, Deep Divine Femme is a collective that I have been curating. I started it on really just like on my journal and then made a page for it on Instagram. And now I host a monthly woman circle here in Austin. It's a sister circle where we gather and we practice deep rest, meditative practices. We allow ourselves to be vulnerable. We share with each other and empower each other to be that divine feminine and our most authentic self. And the reason why I found it so important was because of the lack of it in the Arab community. Like, and not even the Arab community, just in society in general. We live in a very patriarchal society and world, and it's not really geared towards the feminine at all in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, but I think it's becoming more towards that.
Being more accommodating. It's definitely being a little bit more accommodating, but just even like just our work schedule, like the fact that the norm work schedule is wake up every single day, have your 8 to 5, your regular hours every single day. You are expected to deliver the same amount of productivity every single day. Like, that is very masculine. Mm. That go, that do, that very, you know, straightforward.
And when, then going home, then you have to be the feminine. Going home, the kids, cooking.
Right. It's just not, it's not the natural flow of the feminine, because we are cyclic. We're like the moon. We go in cycles. Our body is going through shifts every single month, every single week, every single day. So the level of energy and productivity that I have this week isn't going to match next week.
Yeah,
or the week after that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the, but that's beautiful. Cycle. Being a woman is a journey, and so yeah, it's not really accommodated in this society. And especially in kind of like the Arab community, I think, unfortunately, there's just a lot of, there's not a lot of emphasis put on the strengths of a woman and that.
Arab woman.
Yeah. And I'll use this as the best example. In Arabi, when we say binat awiya, that is a bad term. Like, yeah. That is,
yeah, we were talking about
that is coined as a bad term. Like, if you were trying to marry your brother to some girl and you asked around and they said, oh, hiya awiya,
hiya
bint awiya, you would steer clear.
Which translate to like
powerful.
It really translate to that this woman is strong, but yeah. In the Arab sense of that, like, like, watch out, like, she, you know, she's, like, snappy, she's, like, this brat.
Or something. But it's, like, it's not, like, that's so sad, actually. Because then that paints the expectation that, okay, then the accepted woman is that she's well-behaved, is that she sits down, is that she just is quiet yeah,
you
and
know
listens.
What, and you know what that is in Arabic? Haya a'le.
A'le.
Like, she's calm, like, she sits down, like, she's... behaved. She's well behaved.
Yeah, she's well behaved. Well, that's it's interesting that you say that because, like, well behaved, I thought that a'le translates to that, but I think a'le literally translates to mindful.
Which was, okay.
Which was another thing. I was like, you know,
you can call me mindful.
Yeah, so I thought a'le was like, oh, it's well behaved, well behaved. But then when I thought,
I mean,
like,
but
it's
that's
just
what
mindful.
They mean when they
yeah,
say it.
Yeah, exactly.
That, but that's what they mean when they say
yeah,
it. So
exactly. So. So, yeah, and then, of course, came the roller coaster of it's time to tell parents. It's time to tell parents. And thank you so much, Tala, to my younger sister for really paving
for
the road.
For paving the way to take off the hijab.
She really paved the road for me. Like, she took one for the team.
Took one for the team.
She took a huge one for the team.
So we're three sisters. I'm the middle sister, and I'm the only one, the only hijabi in the room. I'm the only one that currently wears the hijab. TikTok, is she going to take it off?
Oh.
Guess we'll never know. XOXO. Gossip. Serene. Gossip hijabi.
So, yeah, Tala really paved the way on that one. Shouts out to Tala. Definitely.
Just, like, celebrating this.
I mean, she made it a, like,
wait, let's
loads
pause there.
Easier.
We're not celebrating taking off the hijab. We're celebrating
her paving the road for me.
Woman stepping into, like, giving.
What are we celebrating?
We're celebrating
women being celebrated no matter what. Being
yeah.
accepted no matter what. Being accepted no matter
yeah.
what. Unconditional okay. love, because that's what your family's supposed to be. It's supposed to be that unconditional love. It is, like, that is what family is. It's the unconditional love
yeah,
that no matter
telling
what, they're not
to
gonna
go,
throw you in the
we,
trash can if you take
we
off
are
your
not
hijab.
We are not
or bully you on Instagram.
We are not telling women to take off their hijab and hype
no.
it up and make it this thing and validate it. It's more from a perspective, just so you understand, of like the deep root behind it, of kind of having the power, having the choice, celebrating yourself, figuring it out for yourself. And then
yeah.
just like you said, you see, like, modesty everywhere, and you still even think of, like, wearing scarves and throwing it on your head and
yeah.
you know, things like that. It's just like a journey
yeah.
of coming back to that. And I would rather you take it off and then come back to it 10 times stronger than
mm-hmm.
just wearing it and hating it and just
yeah.
being bitter. That's not a way to live.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, of course, everything happens for a reason, and I think that this stage in my life that I am hijabless, it really did serve a purpose, and it came for a reason to be here, because, you know, like, I have my career, I have my job, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't have the job I have without my hijab, but maybe. Maybe not. It just wouldn't have been the same experience. It just would not have been the same experience.
Yeah, so I remember we were, like, in this German hot dog restaurant, and it's when you first mentioned to me that you're kind of taking it off, like, you just don't wear it anymore. And, you know, we were talking about kind of, like, why. By the way, those hot dogs did not smack.
Wiener schnitzel?
Yeah, I think. Schnitzel.
There's one
frigor?
In Arlington?
I don't know. No, it was in back home.
That's a fun word.
Schnitzel pretzel?
Wiener schnitzel.
Aunt Annie's? Okay. So you were... And it kind of made me mad because you tied the hijab back to your work. Oh, I took it off because, like, they wouldn't give me the job in engineering if I wore the hijab. And that pissed me off because... Like, what do you mean? That means that it didn't have to do with the hijab, you know?
Yeah. I think the truth is that I felt less I just felt less confident going to an interview with my hijab. I just felt like I had to prove myself even more. And I'm sure that that has a lot to do with my experience at Airbus, where my manager was a very, like, TCU white woman, and I always felt like I had to double prove myself to her.
TCU. Buckies.
Like, I just always felt like I had to prove to her, like, I'm not oppressed. Like, I'm actually smart. Like,
I hate when you feel like that. And
it's the worst. And that was my fear. And you feel that in engineering. Truly, that was my fear. Yeah, it wasn't that I'm not going to be accepted because I wear the hijab, but it was just that I would have to try so much harder.
Survival of the fittest, yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, what kind of workplace is that? Like, exactly. It's dreading going every day thinking that you have to prove to your boss. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, like, I had a hijabi boss.
Nice.
Hello, that's like so rare. And guess what I did? I left the job. But, you know, obviously I have an episode where I talk about it. It had nothing to do with the boss. Loved her, amazing, powerful. She became, you know, manager, boss, love her.
Yeah.
But wow, like, just to know, like, that two, that there's like those two experiences in Texas in the same area. So yes, there's Bucktooth, Toothy, Becky, Wendy's, Burger King, and Whataburger, Bucky's. Cowboy Armadillo Blue Bonnets. I pledge allegiance to the Texas State of America. So there's that. And then you can find, like, the Arab and Muslim community. And I was, like, I worked at the Catholic charities. And the director at the time was Muslim. And in our meetings, we would literally start them, like, reading our favorite Quran verses. Like, huh?
That's amazing.
And my immediate boss was a hijabi, you know. She wore the hijab. And my coworker was a hijabi. And just so rare. Like, we would each other, like, when to pray, where to pray. My director, I would let him borrow the, like, prayer mat. Like, that's such a blessing. And just to show you guys that, you know, we keep saying, like, Texas, Southern, South, like, this. And but there's also, like, my side to it. So it's interesting to, like, see both.
Yeah, and kind of, like, circling back to, you know, saying that everything happens for a reason and that my time here served a purpose. I met my soulmate that I am now engaged to.
Period. I didn't know you were going to talk about that, but let's talk about it.
Well, it's a huge, I mean, to be quite honest, I don't think Moni and I would have the relationship that we have
if you wore the hijab, because you weren't, you wouldn't be in certain places as a hijabi.
Not even that. It's just, like, because he is Iranian, I don't think
Iranian?
Yeah, I think that the experience, even us meeting just in the beginning, would not have been the same.
Are you talking about, like, the hijab?
Yeah.
In what context? What do you mean?
Because of the convoluted view
of hijab in Iran.
Yeah, exactly.
Y'all, it's getting political. I told y'all, I always come back to politics.
But see, it's crazy. But exactly, because hijab in Iran is so political, if I, Yasmin, was a hijabi at that time, we would not have A, met, or B, had our relationship flourish the way it did.
Well, I don't know about that, because, I mean, politics, everything aside, it's like, a guy seeing you for who you are, whether you wear the hijab or not. If he wanted to, he would.
Yeah.
I don't think it really had anything to do with the hijab. Don't do that to me.
Well, I'm just speaking about, like...
Because as a hijabi woman, it's my opinion. We struggle with this. Because your hair being the beauty of a woman and what's deemed attractive to a man, the way that guys find women attractive with their hair, and then covering that, you kind of have this deep-rooted feeling, well, I'm not attractive to boys, so I have to, like, try harder. Am I ever gonna be in a relationship? Am I ever gonna be married? What do I have to do to step out there and make myself look available? But also, isn't that, like, not the point of the hijab? So it's like, we struggle with that. So you saying that, I don't think I would tie it to the hijab.
No, I'm not speaking generally. Let me
say this again. So if any guy actually wants to marry you or is into you, and doesn't accept the hijab, then he's not the one, sis.
Yeah.
You accept me 100% just what I am. Like, yeah. That's a huge red flag. If they don't accept you exactly 100% as you are, I don't care if I'm wearing a jilbab. I don't care if I'm wearing a niqab with the clown face, rainbow shoes, and a fringe hat and cactus arms. I described the seahorse on SpongeBob.
No, you're right. You're right.
You better accept me just like I am.
Yeah. It's very true. It's very true, this one. I think that, like, what I'm speaking, I'm speaking very specifically to Mani. I'm not speaking about, like, men or just, you know, their viewpoint on hijab. I'm speaking very specifically to Mani and his relationship.
Like, he's Iranian, the way that... Yeah, exactly. Let's go back to, like, the way that, like... Iran, you know, obviously they're
like, we know what's going on in Iran, yeah, literally right now. Yeah. So it just would have been a different experience, and I think that it just would not have played out the way that it played out right now. It just wouldn't have. That's just the truth of it.
Yeah, because at that point,
like, we could still be together, we could still be married, right? But like, it just would not have been the same storyline. You know, and that I, again, I'm speaking very specifically to Mani just because I know him very personally. That's all. I'm not saying this is like a big grand scale thing.
Yeah, but it's personal. We're not like, yeah, talking about it's the very hijab. Personal. So we're just talking about her very specific example.
Yeah, and you know, and I've shared with you obviously like his viewpoints, and like, you know, his perspective, and so, you know, again, I know he would have accepted me any which way, but it just, it served its purpose, it served a reason, and I think that might have been one of them. And that kind of brings me to also learning more about not just the hijab, but just covering your head and how preserving that is for your crown energy. For your aura, for your...
I love that. I learned that concept. I don't know if I learned it from you or from a yoga instructor or from somewhere, but kind of how that aura in the crown bounces back when you're wearing the hijab.
I told
it,
you
like,
that.
Preserves, you told me, like, it preserves it back in there.
Yeah, it's like, crazy. Whoa, it's beautiful.
That's mind-blowing, the concept of the hijab like that.
Yeah.
No one... we had the disappointing example of the wrapped and unwrapped lollipop, you know?
Yeah, oh my god. But yeah, the fact, and it makes so much sense, is like that energy emitting from your crown, from your forehead, from your hair, when you have a head covering, it's bouncing right back to you, into your head, into your brain, into your aura. And like, that is just so beautiful. That is the prime example of nurturing yourself, and kind of like that deep divine femme is like bringing that love and that nurture back to yourself, because that's how you pour from a full cup.
Yeah, it's crazy. I refer to my hijab sometimes as just being like my security blanket, my safety blanket. Like, it makes me feel safe.
Yo, it's kind of like the sky is a blanket as an atmosphere for the earth. Like, that's the purpose of the sky,
preserving the ozone,
protecting
layer.
It the sky is a protective blanket layer. Yeah, the sky is a protective blanket for the earth, protecting it from the harsh rays of the sun.
Nice. We just proved to you
and
the validation
the cold
of
the
hijab.
Moon.
So put it on right now.
JK. Well, and it's not even it, like, and that kind of like brings me to my point, is like, I don't know if I like, do I see hijab in my future? Yeah, I do. But what I do see closer in my future is covering my head
with a blanket.
No,
with
that doesn't. No, like, I see myself wearing a scarf that covers my head, and I'm gonna do that in my own way that feels good to me.
We love a 2009 bang hijab.
Not bang
talk
hijab. I told you,
talk
like those,
about, let's talk about our hijab eras.
I'm talking about this, the way that our ancestors used to wear it when they did laundry. You know what I'm
okay,
talking about?
A little Turkish wrap, laundry, yeah. on the porch.
Like, I see that for
milking
myself.
The goats. Okay, I like her.
Yeah.
I'm feeling her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually wear that style on top of my hijab, interestingly. Mm-hmm. Gives me a little bit of...
Double hijab.
Double aura. Double, triple aura. My brain is going to explode from the energy.
Yeah. Exactly. Because I think, like, the amta just was not the vibe for me. Like, I didn't know I had curly hair until I took off my
hijab. I'm crying.
Oh, my God.
Bear me right now.
No, like...
Yeah, because it's, like, so oppressed. No.
Because your coils...
I meant to say compressed. Oopsie. Wink, wink. Mm. Because it was so compressed.
Yeah.
Why is that so funny? You didn't know, like, your natural...
Well, like, it was... It had some sort of texture to it, some wave, some curl, but no. It was not like this. It was not like this.
And you it's know, because... You know, hair care, sunlight.
Yeah.
So, let me tell you, as, like, a hijabi, a little tip about, like, kind of still nurturing and embodying like your natural hair, not forgetting about it. So because I'm a homebody, right, I stay at home and we have a backyard in our home, so every morning or at least once a day I just sit out in the backyard. You know, obviously I don't wear my own hijab in the house, for those that you thought I did. I sit in the backyard and I just let it flow. All the aura is released from my head, but the wind flows. You know, I'm still a hijabi, but...
It's so important, yeah. Too, because that was something that I missed hair. Very much. Yeah, the wind flowing through my hair, so it's important to...
Yeah, you don't... That doesn't go out of the window just when you become a hijabi. You kind of...
But you can't do it out of the window.
You get to... No, but this is what's so special about it, because as a hijabi, you get to cherish that moment for what it is. Mm-hmm. When you're not a hijabi, it's like, okay, I do it all the time. I step out, I drive in a convertible, I do this. You know, it just becomes the norm. Mm-hmm. And then your hair starts stinking. But it's like frizzy. Making time. And it feels so good because it's so precious and you can like only do it in that moment. Kind of like capturing a sunset. Mm-hmm. That's what's so special about the hijab.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, put it on.
You better.
Sponsored by hijab. Just do it. Thank you for tuning in and spending this time listening to this episode. If you could take 1 second to support this podcast by sharing it and leaving an honest review, it would mean so much to me and help us to reach many different audiences to spread our stories about the hijab. Until next time, never forget the power of being a hijabi.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Thanks for reaching the end of the episode. We hope you learned something new about the women who wear the hijab. You can watch the recorded video of this episode on YouTube at Journal Hijabi. And be sure to follow our Instagram at Journal Hijabi to stay updated on all things hijabi and help spread our stories. Until next time, never forget the power of being a hijabi.